reconvene here. I'm going to make a little change on the agenda here. I've got half the Nevada Division of Forestry been sitting downstairs all day. So what I'd like to do at this point is take public comment on if there is any on item 26 up to this point, and then we'll recess and reconvene as the 473 district. Any public comment? Okay, then we'll recess right now and reconvene as the 473 Fire Protection District, and we're down to item 28, and this is approval of the Story County Interlocal Agreement with the Nevada Department of Conservation and Nevada Division of Forestry, who's going to, you want to kick it off, Garen?
Sure.
Thank you, Gary Haynes, Fire Chief, for the record. Thank you for moving these guys up real quick, Mr. Chairman, all board commissioners. There should be two agreements. The first is the approval of the Story County Interlocal Agreement between Story County and State of Nevada Department of Conservation. It's the agenda item. I don't need to read it all. Essentially, what this does is an interlocal agreement that allows Story County, the 474 Fire Protection District, the 473 Fire Protection District, Nevada Division of Forestry to all enter to one agreement. It directly ties into item number 29. 29 is the agreement that will allow the wildland fire protection duties and responsibilities to transfer from the 473 Fire District to Story County General Government. And I'm not sure how to walk you through this except with that.
I think I pretty much have an understanding of what we're doing, unless there's some questions.
Questions from my desk.
Nope. And I think, Commissioners, the only thing I wanted to caveat with, well, first off, I want to say that the team from the NDF has been phenomenal to work with.
I think Stratford over here.
But we want to make sure that we approach this in two different ways, both with these agreements and also with the wildland fire budget, whether it be as a 473 district or not, because all this is pending legislation.
Correct.
And signature by the governor.
Correct.
But at their request, I went down and testified on behalf of their budget that does facilitate the wildland fire protection program and this interlocal agreement. And as we've stated before at their last presentation that Mike Klug gave, I don't see Mike here today, you know, this is what we have been asking for years, and this is the best of all worlds to us. So I don't know if any of the NDF team wants to speak, but it's a great day, and we certainly will keep our fingers crossed as this goes through the grinder down in Carson City, that it comes out on the right way. So.
All righty. Any other discussion on it from anyone? Okay, a motion.
So do you want approval, Mr. Chairman, of number 28 and number 29?
Take them. Let's go ahead and do number 28.
All right. Okay, so at this time, move for approval of number 28, Story County Interlocal Agreement between Story County, State of Nevada Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, the Nevada Division of Forestry, Story County 474 Fire Protection District, and Story County 473 Fire Protection District.
Okay.
I'll second that motion.
All right. I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. And also an aye for me. Item number 29, then, will be approval of Story County interlocal agreement between Story County, State of Nevada Department of Conservation, Natural Resources, and Nevada Division of Forestry. This interlocal is for Story County to become a participatory member of a statewide wildland fire protection program, and it defines an annual work plan for the party. And I believe
I think that summarizes it very well. This is the first step to the dissolution of the 473 Fire Protection District. I don't think we'll probably be able to meet the next commission meeting, but probably the first meeting in May will be the actual dissolution paperwork that will become effective June 30th. So this is the first step of a two-step process.
Okay, so what's your... You want to approve this now, or do you want to...
No, I think we need to approve this now, Mr. Okay. Chairman, and then I'll bring forward, along with Division of Forestry in okay. May, the actual dissolution paperwork.
All right.
This essentially gives us the approval by the boards to move this process forward.
And again, this is tied to...
This is tied to the budget at the legislature. This really facilitates our bill for this is $150,000 for what was best termed in insurance policy from Mike last time. And allows us to begin the transition again. I can't thank NDF enough for their flexibility. Probably the most flexible state organization I've come across in recent times. As Chief Hames mentioned this morning, on behalf of the new Story County Wildland Fire Protection Program, we have begun advertising for seasonal firefighters. NDF and their finance gentlemen in the back there have graciously said, you go ahead and hire employees and use our monies. In the 473 fund, so it is moving seamlessly in anticipation of the budget approval.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Go ahead.
It's just a curiosity. This is about $150,000 for the insurance, am I right?
It will be within the 04 fund. 040 Wildland Fire Protection.
Can you give us a roughly a bet? What is the benefit to the residents on the basis?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Happy to. That's a great question.
And I apologize. I'm so intimate with this, and it's been on our plate so much I forget sometimes to throw out the benefits. The benefit to this program is it transitions the seasonal employees from just wildland fire protection employees to all-risk employees. That bolsters our staffing on a 8-hour per day status over our peak call volume times. That's one benefit. The other benefit is with the WFPP program, and I'm going to look back at NDF because I see them all sitting there not saying a word. Thanks, guys. The WFPP program will essentially allow us to do initial attack responses to wildland fires. Anything that escapes initial attack responses, where we have to call in air assets, inmate crews, hotshot crews, any of those costs will now be covered by the DCNR, specifically Division of Forestry, through this WFPP program. Am I missing anything? There's also some additional ancillary benefits in that once we sign and become partners with the Division of Forestry and DCNR, we can also use some of their resources, such as inmate crews at this last flooding event, to stockpile sandbags, to put out sandbags. We can use their aircraft for search and rescue through the sheriff's office. We can use their aircraft during earthquakes or floods for reconnaissance missions at no cost, all bundled within this wildland fire protection plan. Did that answer your question, Jim?
A lot cleaner way to do this.
Yes, if you just answer some of the questions, I just want to ask one last question.
The question I'm going to ask is, what is the relationship between the tax that we have in the property tax that we pay a certain percentage, I believe it's 0.2 or 0.3 something, to the NDF? What is the relationship between that one and the tax that we pay in the property tax with this 150 with this wildfire insurance? Thank you.
Okay, and I think what she's referring to is the 0.11% or 0.11 ad valorem rate property tax for wildland fire protection. I think we'll get into this a lot more in the 474 and 473 dedicated budgets. That 0.11 ad valorem rate is going to fund the seasonal positions. It'll fund all the support mechanisms for those seasonal positions, the ancillary things that you don't necessarily think of, uniforms, wildland, personal protective equipment, medical, physical, pre-hire examinations. That's what those funds will be used for. We'll be hiring 11 seasonal staff that will be county employees. Through this agreement, the county is directing the 474 Fire Protection District to manage that those personnel.
Great. Okay. Very well explained. All right, looking for a motion on number 29.
Mr. Chairman, speaking to item 29, I move for approval of Story County WFPP interlocal agreement, as the Chairman Shervagan has already read into the record.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. One more item. And what we'll do here now, we need to adjourn as the 473 district goes back and readjourn as the Board of County Commissioners.
Can we do the 473?
We're doing number 30.
On number 30.
32.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, let's do that.
Before Chief Hames starts, before Chief Hames starts, in this part, we're going to stumble through this a little bit. This is done as a redundant approval, assuming that the WFPP program is budgeted and approved. This will be a moot tentative budget hearing, and hopefully we can either have it out of the final budget or we may have to do it again. This is an abundance of caution in case the WFPP program is not funded and therefore we can't dissolve the 473 fire district. In other words, we would turn to our friends in NDF and say we still need them to provide wildland fire protection. So consider this duplicative to one that you are going to have when you do convene or reconvene under item 34 as the Board of County Commissioners, when Chief Hames will be representing the Wildland Fire Protection Program, because that would be a general government function, not a 474 function, and of course the 473 would be dissolved. So what we have agreed to with NDF is we're going to run with our numbers for their 473. The good news is there's provisions in the legislature that, depending on the outcome in legislative years, odd years, we can go back and actually amend our final budget up to 30 days post-closure of the session. So there's flexible room in there should this not happen, but we're anticipating that it will. So this would be still with your 473 Fire District Board cap.
Yep. Does that make sense to everyone? I think we got them all confused enough.
I can't say that I'm not there with them. No, I think basically we're saying that it's one budget, we're submitting it under general government as if the program went forward, or if it doesn't go forward, we will keep it as a 473 Fire Protection District, if I'm following that right.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, if there's no comments, then I'll call for a motion on that.
We are on 30, right? Not 30.
Yeah, well,
okay. Okay, we'll make sure I'm on the right page.
Yeah. Backwards, boys.
What number?
Number 30.
That's
tentative budget hearing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So at this time, move for approval of item 30, tentative budget.
Then
for the 473 Fire Protection District.
Second. Are you a deuce?
I'm what? I'm on board.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Now we can adjourn and reconvene at the Board of County Commissioners and get this last one, which is item, where was I? Oh, 36, which is approval of Story County interlocal agreement between Story County, Department of Conservation, Natural Resources, Division of Forestry, and the 474 Fire District. I won't read the rest of it.
This is identical to the previous approval?
Saying that we approve of it at the commission level.
Correct.
Yep. So
you've, and just for clarification, because I think everybody's probably getting confused a little bit, is the Board of County Commissioners also serve as the Board of Fire Commissioners for the NRS 473 Fire Protection District as well as the NRS 474 Fire Protection District. So even though it seems redundant on the agenda, each of these has to be blessed and approved by this board as different seats.
We knew all this some months ago. All right, so there's any questions or conversation on that? We'll go ahead and call for an approval on that.
32.
That'll be on item 36.
This is redundant of what we just approved.
It's just redundant.
We'll get back to that, Commissioner Gilman. It's a 474.
Yeah.
Well, I'm under an unusual kind of torture down here. I had an insurance shake this morning and I got probably 6:30. I have a VA sitting over this is just unusual function. So where are we?
Number 36.
Number 36.
At this time, Mr. Chairman, I move for approval. Item 36, approval of Story County interlocal agreement between Story County State and Nevada Department of Conservation and Natural Resources.
All we need is for Lance to say, I'll second.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Okay. All righty. You guys are out of here. Thank you so much for hanging around all day.
Thank you. And
I guess we'll all be seeing what the legislature and the governor does.
We can knock 37 out of the park.
I know.
We're going to come back.
Cheap, I say, Zach. The
Thursday.
So we should end information coming
pretty fast.
Okay. All right. Good deal. All right. I'll see you guys later. Take care.
Thank you all very much.
Thanks a lot.
We have to do 37 now, too.
And we
that's repetitive also.
It actually isn't Jack in the Box. It's a secretary.
Oh, I guess.
I'm just cheap. I'd say so.
Should we do 37 now also, Gary? As long as we're right there. That's the Story County WFPP interlocal.
Sure. Yeah, I think that makes sense. That'd be the last.
Let's get that one out of the way.
Right.
And we'll go back to budget.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, at this time, move for approval of item 37, Story County WFPP interlocal agreement between Story County, State of State of Nevada Department of Conservation and Natural Resources.
All righty.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Okay, now we can go back to item number
26, I think.
26, and the next one up is
Mr. Dotson.
Mr. Dotson, Community Service.
Commissioners, while Mr. Dotson brings his documentation forward for the Community Services budget, I do want to stress, because it's been asked here already, if you are going to approve the budget for the Virginia City Tourism Commission, as was mentioned earlier, the latest resolution that is currently in effect, and there will be a revised one shortly, but the latest resolution was done at the instructions and direction of the Nevada Department of Taxation Committee on Local Government Finance, and that gave the opinion that the BCTC is its own separate local government entity. In most cases, we just have to agree through MOU to provide certain services. The county commission's approval is not appropriate according to taxation, and the MOU, as it reflects, does provide still for some county oversight through my review, which Mr. Dotson has done before presentation to his board. So that is the status of the BCTC budget and why it's not before you today.
Okay. Good.
Thank you, Pat, and thank you, Commissioners, and folks that are still here on a long day. I know I'll make this quick. Again, I do wear a few hats, as Pat alluded to there, with the directors of tourism for the Virginia State Tourism Commission and also as the Community Services Director. The first part up there is something that was mentioned earlier about the Parks Fund. Again, that, not to rehash it, but the Park Fund was actually established by resolution in September 2010. And then again, a separate resolution in May 2011, some funds were reallocated back into those funds, specifically into separate ones, including Miners Park, Highlands, Mark Twain, and Lockwood. Over the last couple of years, I've done some projects through these parks. I believe there still is some question as to actually what the bottom line is, the funds, what balances is it within the funds. Mr. Gallagher has that under control. I think we're going to have that out shortly. With my records that I have, and again, I'll work with you, we have roughly about $6,500 approximately. The bulk of it is within the Mark Twain Fund, Mark Twain Park. The Highlands was depleted considerably about a year and a half ago. We did a major improvement there at the park, put up retaining walls, put in some new equipment. Again, the majority of these funds are accrued through $250 out of business licenses, out of new permits for constructions. Yes, so new construction, there's $250 taken and goes to this fund for improvements within that area's park, if you will. So with that, again, I'll just follow up with Mr. Gallagher on getting an actual amount to make sure that my records reflect with that. But the way that is described, forgive me if I'm wrong, Hugh, is that these have to be improvements to the park. You can't do everyday maintenance, ongoing, mowing the lawn, that type of stuff, ongoing stuff. It has to be new improvements as per NRS. So there was some confusion about that in years past. That's why it was clarified a couple of years ago.
Per statute, the NRS 278 says the money in the fund is to pay for, whereas the money in the fund is to pay for operational and maintenance costs of each park. Operational maintenance. So utilities in that are not part. And whereas the money in the fund for the fiscal year may not revert to any other fund or be a surplus for any purpose other than the purpose specified in this fund. So it's pretty clear. So we're in pretty good shape.
Okay, the other part is the community services portion. Again, with that, I wear quite a few hats, which special events is a big part of that. I actually do all the coordination, work out the logistics with our sheriff and our fire department, our public works, do the permitting with the NDOT, work with them on road closures, and then more of a consolidated effort. Basically, in years past, folks would come to the commission, have to look for permission to put on the event, and do a lot of legwork. Now, basically, it's a one-stop shop. I also do serve as a hearing officer for nuisance complaints and some minor ordinance violations, stuff on the boardwalk. I do help with the website, manage the backside of that, and help each department keep their pages updated. I also do parks and recreation. Again, and part of that would be improving some of the parks, working with Public Works and Mike and his crew and whatnot. So the budget you had before you basically consists the first part there basically would be flat to last year. It does compare to the library of last year was in that fund. This year it was not. If you were to take that out and compare apples to apples, it would be basically flat. And as I walk you through this real quick, you'll see it's basically the flat to last year, even with the increase in health care and the 2% for increase. Salaries based up of my portion of my salary. The other portion, again, is through the Virginia State Tourism Commission. Then we also have two part-time employees that are based out of the Lockwood Senior Center. Operational support is a pretty good change. As we looked at this transformation from the VCTC into the county, we had two different pots of, say, office supplies, two different pots of fuel, two different things for training and whatnot. So it just looking at it, I like to make the recommendation that we eliminate it. Looking at how much I've spent throughout this year on a community service, didn't make sense to budget that. I think we can use that in other areas. So I propose to make that zero from $3,200 to last year, and we'll pick up that expense within the tourism budget. Going forward, we also serve as a liaison to community support entities here in the county, a lot of our nonprofits, if you will. I'll go down them here in order as they are before you. The first one is the Virginia City Senior Center. Their budget last year was $130,000. I like propose to leave it the same this year. The majority of that is, again, for their everyday operational expenses and also help with their Meals on Wheels program. The RSVP is another volunteer program catered towards the seniors. It helps again with their programs, mostly with the meals. Then we go down to the community chest. Last year we bumped them up to $65,000 from $50,000. I know that Sean's here today, and Sean has a lot of great programs and a lot of things that he needs to keep the community what it is, and I know he'd like to speak. But my suggestion or my recommendation is we leave it the same. Again, there is some documentation there for you to read. And going forward, going into Pipers there, Pipers, again, we'd like to leave that the same at 13.5. What we do is we split that the expenses with the school district. They did recently purchase that building, but they still have expenses. So we would like to agree to still help them out as they get that building back into shape. St. Mary's Arts Center would be left the same at 22.8. Mike Devon also mentioned that we've been helping them in addition to this with repairs of their boiler and their deck, or rather their front porch. Cooperative Extension is another program we have up here that helps with 4-H, does some shooting sports. They do the radon program, which I believe Joanne presented to the commission a couple of months ago. We will leave them the same. We're also always looking to help them whatever we can in the way of in-kind solutions to try and increase that support a little bit, if you will. Lockwood Senior Center. The Senior Center is would remain at $25,000. Again, at about 85% of this is just their meals program, which we contract out with Washoe County. There are a little bit other incidental for the operation of the building there in Lockwood. Fourth Ward School would remain the same as last year at $60,800. G-Posse is funded by a lease off of a cell tower there, which was $10,000 last year. It would be left alone the same as this year. They also help with the shooting sports and other community events here in Virginia City. Community Support Fund would remain the same as last year, as $2,000. This fund is something that we use as when we get a non-budget request, like, for instance, say helping out with a spur-of-the-moment fundraiser, Mighty Mites basketball program, just something that's kind of comes up unexpected, if you will, that we use. And I think also, it's not on the presentation I had, but I know that there was an additional $6,000 that ties into that. Primarily that community support fund was just for Virginia City. And I believe with Mr. Gilman's recommendation is that, and I think it's a great one, is that we look to do something in each community. So I think that right before you have a $6,000 request for Mark Twain, they are going to be redoing their building down there and be working with the newly appointed group. So my plan would be to get with them very quickly and see what kind of improvements and what direction they'd like to go. Then lastly, before you, there is just the petroglyphs. That's more project-driven. It's not something that's year-to-year. A couple years ago, we improved the gates out there, made some interpretive signs. So I don't feel that this year we need to fund them. They are also funded through the Nevada Historical Society. So with that, I'll entertain any questions. Again, with the library out, comparing apples to apples, the budget is basically flat to last year.
And if I may, on community support, just to segue into things like how we use it frequently, this was for kind of surprise events or unanticipated events, if you will, that come up that are worthy, as Denny's mentioned. For instance, this year, I don't believe we've spent anything of our allocation. So we have a request in right now that Chief Haynes talked about earlier, I believe, called the Every 15-Minute Program. And it's a phenomenal program that we're looking at making an investment in it that will touch every high school that goes throughout our county, countywide. So those are the types of programs that we look at throughout the year.
Quick comment from my chair, new commissioner. So a lot of these special support programs are, and you know my passion for zero baseline budget. I like to start at zero and work up from there and see why and where we are. And so sometimes a comment, with all due respect, that things are flat from last year. The question always pops up in my mind, some things could be reduced and some things could be improved or increased, with a thought given to where are we, it was in the funding process. Why is it the same as last year? Should it be more this year? Should it be less this year? So I'm assuming, as with all the other budget items that we look at within the budget cycle, that you are sitting with our comptroller. You folks are looking at these individual items, analyzing, identifying, and putting the thought process into the bottom line numbers.
Yes, that's a great comment, Lance. In addition to that, I probably should elaborate a little bit more. I go to each of their board meetings when I can, and I'm involved in their day-to-day operations. Not completely, but enough to know where they're spending their money, what's happening, what kind of programs they're doing. The senior center is putting on a fundraiser or those kind of things. So I got a pretty good feel. I do relay that back to the commissioners and to Pat when I formulated my suggestion here. And I guess when I referred to flat, that was, I look at the line item of the support that the everyday operational supplies for community services. I didn't need them. I just felt that I haven't been using them. I've been, or I have, it hasn't been a lot. And to try and keep two different pools, do I fill up on a tourism card? Do I fill up on a community service card when I'm kind of doing both all the time? It just didn't make sense to have that extra pool. So we pulled that out.
Financial reports from these various elements we're looking at here that says there's something.
Yeah, and
I've never seen
it. I sit on a lot of these different boards here as a committee member, and I can tell you that all of them are just and I see the financials from them. They're all 501c3s, and I look at their financials, and they don't always have enough to get through the end of the year, and so we've tried to keep them at a minimum level of funding, but they haven't had increases in quite a while. And so if you figure, cost of living and CPI, they're actually, taking a slight reduction each year. But we've had some tough times, St. Mary's Art Center in particular, and with the heating system and the whole front porch falling apart on a darn thing, and no grant money, and of course, not much anticipation of future grants under sequestration. So I don't know what some of these, I don't know how we're going to fund them. It's going to be a tough nut, but we own all that land and, those properties, so we need to, certainly don't want to have them fall apart. We've put millions of grant money, public funds into them to get them restored. And
so these are not just operating funds, they're actually maintenance funds?
They're doing maintenance and everything out of that. They're paying their, their part-time staff a little bit here and there. Board members get nothing. We have, executive directors in each of those, and it's tough, coming up with it. Public Works is...
Yeah, what I might add too, looking at the last 3 years, we've cut them a minimum of 25% over the last, this including this year. We didn't cut from last year, but before that it was 25%. In some cases more. There was some pretty good clips. I know that Nevada Cooperative Extension went from about 30,000, Pat, if I'm not mistaken, down to the 15,000. I believe Sean, one time, which we did have a nurse. For some of the stuff in here, which I said I don't want to mistake, but there was upwards of 100,000, if I'm not mistaken. So we have cut them pretty good in the last couple of years.
Do you have the opportunity to run all these by our comptroller from a fiscal management standpoint?
Certainly you can. Yes, and I know we do get the Jeep Posse, we do get the senior centers. Cooperative Extension has always sent a letter in for request. So I can certainly.
I don't think there's any.
Fourth World School has certainly worked with Mr. Gallagher on their financials.
I don't think there's any problem with the 501c3s of exposing their financial statements. I think that they would do that voluntarily.
I think they have to.
Yeah.
Actually, yes, sir. Yeah. And we're going to be forming 501c3s for potentially Lockwood and for Mark Twain in the coming months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good questions. Anything else?
Thank you, Jenny.
Okay.
I'd like to add on to the Dr. Gilman's comment. There is actually, as he said, that the seniors in North County and the Mark Twain are establishing community processes of which funds will be given to. It's my recommendation that you are a 501c3. You will not be doing it with this in the dark, because I will do it with you. So,
thank you.
You know, I saw that. I saw the fear. But and there's a lot of things that go with that, because obviously, being a 501c3 may enable you to get some grants that normally you couldn't under the best story count.
That's the big one.
So.
That's probably one of the key elements that's missing, that both in Mark Twain and in Lockwood, the opportunity for the grants. If you take a look at what's happened here in the county in general, it's closely with Terry. She's done a phenomenal job of the grants.
When we were first organized, they talked about it and decided they just wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to surely be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Park Fund, do you want to?
You want me to vote?
Hang on. Park Fund, Denny?
Pardon?
Park Fund, did you want to talk about
that first?
Okay. We're good on that?
Yeah, we did that.
Okay. Next up is. Okay. All right. I just want to get myself. Okay. Sean, come on up.
I say we're supposed to wait till we get to the end of the budget.
Yeah.
Thing. Except Sean, we're going to make an exception right now, though.
Sean, we're going to make an exception here.
I'm not the chairman, so you can't blame me.
Sean Griffin, Community Chest. I wish I'd have brought 45 hamburgers. I'd have been the happiest guy in the room. So two things. I want to go to the Community Chest budget, and then I want to go to the library budget. To answer Lance's question, we spend $18,000 a year on our audit, and the county's received it every year. We've been in business. All of our financials are online. Our board reviews them every month. So vis-a-vis the Community Chest budget, I want to be clear. It's $50,000. We received $100,000 in 2007, and it's been $50,000 every year since. Our health care and retirement costs went up $25,000 in this year. All this material is in your narrative you received. We raised our deductible to $1,500 per person in our office just to make our health care costs. We receive less than 3% of our operating funds annually from the county to run that shop. We continue to grow. We continue to provide resources in this region. And not a day goes by without us being asked to do more. So in view of the fact that both Lockwood and Mark Twain will be coming online in terms of their community centers. I was asked to also put in an additional budget request if you want us to do programming in those two facilities. This is above and beyond the $50,000 for Community Chest and the $15,000 that the county entered into the agreement with us to pay for the operating costs of the community center. To provide halftime programming in either facility annually would cost $20,000 plus $6,000 in benefits. We also said we'd be more than willing to do that, and we'd be more than willing to work with both community groups, as we already are, to facilitate that process. If they want to work under our nonprofit as a fiscal agent in the interim, we have no issue with that whatsoever. We're here to help. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So questions on Community Chest before I go forward the library budget. I know everybody's really tired, so I don't want to push it. Okay. So on the library budget, I met with Sarah Jones, Carson City Librarian, Friday, and she said that we could access their electronic media for between $1,000 and $1,500 a year, and that's new information I've received if we partner with them. The most important thing that I could say to you about the library budget, which I've requested $50,000, and that would give you a line item budget to bring it to part-time utilization, have 20 hours a week, and rent and utilities. said if we get your blessing and your support, we can then raise additional revenue. I can't do that. I can't do anything until the commissioners say, we support this, both literally and as a resolution. I can't bring it back to life. As you know, the books are sitting in abeyance on B Street, and we need to get county support to move this process forward. I'm very good at pursuing funds, and I can do that. But I can't do that without your blessing and your fiscal support. I'm, like all of you, I sat through the meeting all day today, and everyone has been, I think, more than gracious with their budget requests. They realize we're all hurting. This library was funded at $100,000 last year and for every year prior for its 23 years of existence. In the intervening year, we managed to get 15 volunteer librarians to come in and thin the stacks. It's a vital collection. We can get it back open. We can get access in the four corners of the county. We can have access to electronic media. We can rent electronic media. We can once again join CLAN, and we can use our nonprofit as the overarching umbrella to pursue these funds. But I can't do a thing unless I get your support. And although I'd love to say we need $100,000 because that's what we really need to get that library open and run as it should be running. But we can make it work with a modicum of investment on your behalf. And this is a community that needs one. We're the only community in Nevada, the only county that doesn't have a library. And I don't think anybody in this room wants that. I think we all want a library. But it can be reinvented and reinvigorated and re-energized so that it can be vital in all parts of the county. That's what I'm trying to do. You remember, nobody's getting paid a dime, so let's just clear that out. This is all volunteer, and you'll remember also that about a year ago, my wife inherited this, and she was at the meeting, and I was in Tonopah working, and the library board just blew up, and she thought it was a bad decision to let it be dissolved and disbanded and the books donated. So that's why we're here. The collection is vital, and we want to see it maintained in some aspect. We can make this happen, and we can make it a vital multi-use facility. If we get it started and running, when the community center is second phase of the community center is up and running, that's a great place for it to finally be located, and we can avoid the issue of rent. But in the meantime, we're living in the real world, and these are the roadblocks I'm up against. And as you go down the road between the tentative budget and the final budget, if push comes to shove, we'll take whatever you can give, but you do need to step up in some way fiscally so that we can formally bless this and move on, and I can go out and get additional revenue. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Did I hear an amount?
Yes, $50,000 is in the budget that I've given you. And it's
startup fund that you would ask for.
Yep.
And any portion thereof.
Or any portion thereof. And what happened in the interim, and that's why I started off with it, because I know everybody's so tired, is that we can partner with the Carson City Library to access all of the electronic media for between $1,000 and $1,500, but we can't do it until you guys bless this. In other words, I can't go in as community chest. So that cost, the electronic media costs, have dropped significantly since I talked to you. But we can also get into, CLAN and all the other things that will bring us access to the entire Nevada library system.
I'm a little hearing impaired in some ways. I'm sorry, being tired. The $1,500 a month is for the electronic.
Yeah, that's just for us to partner with Carson City Library to get access.
That would be an addition to the $50,000.
We'll make it part of the $50,000 if we get it. I didn't know this on Friday, when I gave you the original budget. That's new information. Yeah, Bill.
Would that provide electronic access to? When you say electronic access, internet access, is that what you're saying?
It's electronic access to their electronic media, all of it. So we don't have to buy the electronic database. We don't have to join the system. We can join them as their partner. We can join it as their partner. So all the books that are in, all the electronic media that's in the State of Nevada Library system, we can access by partnering with Carson City. And furthermore, Sarah said that she would be more than willing to help partner with us in every way we can on all the other things, if we can.
But help me understand something. You have a book in the library.
Right.
How are you going to disperse it electronically?
Those are two different things. The physical books at the library, we will work to be as creative as possible to get them available to both Mark Twain, Lockwood, the Highlands, and in our own community.
That's our delivery system.
Yep. Electronic media means we're going to have a computer. The e-readers, electronic access, and we will similarly try to locate those in the four corners of the county. I realize that having a standalone Bricks and Mortar library in one room is not any good to anybody living in Mark Twain, Lockwood, or the Highlands that doesn't have access to transportation. So we're going to try and address that.
If I could just add, we're going to have internet access for there's a Nevada administrative code that specifically sets forth the materials we have to make available either electronically or in book form. And probably 80% of that is available on the internet, which would mean we'd be providing it electronically. So at a minimum, we're going to have to provide for a computer and a means for people to access the internet so they can electronically get the Nevada revised statute, what's going on down in the legislature, the Code of Federal Regulations, all of those things are available on the internet, which means we don't have to buy the books. And there's going to be some books we have to buy, but not that many. And it's probably for Sean to just do a law library, which we're absolutely required to ask.
Well,
it's probably going to take at least $5,000 at a minimum.
I did not address that yet, Bill.
I think I could say that virtually everyone in the room here can access all of that from home right now.
But we have to provide...
I understand that.
First statute.
And then, are the AG opinions, are they online yet?
Yes.
They are?
Yes.
Okay, so we don't need those books.
No. For instance, you have to have a simple practice manual, which is $300-$400. I probably have enough left in my budget that I can buy a bunch of this stuff before the end of this budget year in terms of subscriptions and whatever. And then, and just to go too far, I have internet access to a legal search engine that I'm supposed to be getting charged for, but I haven't been because the district court down in Carson City's done that, and I'm going to get billed for it this year. So that's why I have that money from this year that I can spend on some books. And I think I can get most of the books done, but then they have to be kept up to date, and we have to have internet access for people to get on the internet and electronically access those things.
So, to answer your question about whether or not we can do that, the answer is yes, and we'd be more than willing to help out. As you know, we have a computer facility in our office, and there will be a much larger one in the next phase of the center. And to answer your question, Bill, about the internet access at home, you know, 4 out of 10 kids in Story County School District are eligible for free and reduced lunch. And that means they meet federal poverty income guidelines.
Well, I don't think we're going to resolve this here and now. I think this is possibly a subject for a different discussion.
Chairman, if you'd like, I could gather the information from Sean, both on the initial cost request and his ongoing future expenditures. I could put that in some sort of a document, get what Billy can provide as far as what's supposed to be in the statute, whatever, and by the time the final comes along, you could probably have enough material to make
some kind of informed. So I'll do that.
Okay. Anything else? You should all have the library proposal in your packets. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, where are we at? Sheriff. Did you have some comments? Come on.
Yeah.
Marilyn Miller, president of the advisory board for the Lockwood Community Center. Did I hear it right that Mark Twain was getting $6,000 for a maintenance-type thing? Denny? Okay, is Lockwood getting that? Oh, good, because we have six broken chairs and a broken table.
What have you been doing in there?
We've had these now for 4 years, and we do have a lot of entertainment in that building. And Sean, you do send someone to Lockwood every week, every Thursday, and they do a program down there. So I just wanted those things cleared up, that we do. I have not asked to replace those items yet. I had to throw the chairs out. They're in the dumpster months ago. When someone sits in these fold-up chairs and they weigh 500 pounds, they don't hold up. So that's what happened.
Let me respond just a minute. I'm going to do this off the cuff so you can get in luck.
Okay.
But I believe in the budget that we have $6,000 in Mike Nevin's budget to rehab the facility in Mark Twain. There's some work that has to be done.
Oh, yes. We need kitchen counters.
In addition to that, there's a $6,000 budget set aside for the new board to start their operations this year. So there's a total of $12,000 earmarked that I can identify immediately for Mark Twain.
Well, so far we've been really frugal with our money. We have never gotten anything that we didn't use 100% of the time the minute we've had it.
Well, by understanding what I'm looking at in the budget, there's $25,000, I believe, when we look at this year, so I get this clear.
That's for mostly the lunch program.
Of which?
Yes.
There's $25,000 of which? Suppose I told 85% goes to the food program.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Is for the lunch program. I know that.
It might be a little short on the operating budget. The $6,000 is going to Mark Twain. I'm not sure we'll have to do the math. But
it's enough to buy four chairs and a table.
Yeah, but point well taken. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
What about those poor people in the Highlands who have nothing?
No, there's a trash. Wait a minute. No, there's a trash can.
Look at a tin shed. Yeah.
Name's Gunther Foster, and I'm addressing the subject of the senior center. And just as a perception, when the community service director states that the Virginia City Senior Center is getting $130,000, the Lockwood Center is getting $25,000, and Mark Twain is getting $6,000, which has just been established. The perception factor is the same as with the park fund, to where they're getting $8,000 last year for the park, $292,000, and the numbers, I gave you the numbers earlier. I just want the commissioners, I know we've taken a great stride in making progress today with the situation that I am concerned about, but the perception, when Virginia City gets $130,000, Lockwood gets $25,000, and Mark Twain gets either six or zero for a newly established senior center or community center, I just wanted to address that perception factor to the board.
Well, what about those poor people in the Highlands that have nothing?
Well, then that's something that we can definitely work on. But we have been going through this in Lockwood and in Mark Twain to where we are looking at Virginia City with these funds that are coming. This county is growing. The people, we have 1,000 people, residents in the River District. We are becoming part of the county, and we would like to have that.
Well,
also,
well,
I know you've made the comment that the park fund is the lowest thing on your rung.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I can clarify too, relative to Lockwood, as Marilee knows, you know, the county's investment in the Lockwood operation is not limited to the $25,000. That's a misrepresentation.
In addition, we have approximately $24,000 in salary and benefits. Unlike the Virginia City Senior Center, which is its own 501c3, they hire their employees. We provide them no support. This is a programmatic funding. However, on Lockwood, because of the initial desires there, there are two half part-timers are salaried as county employees. So there's, in addition to $25,000, you're looking at about another $24,000 in salary and benefits that is also embedded elsewhere in the community services budget.
Now, can I move on here? All right, Sheriff, come on up.
Before I get started, just since I'm always willing to lend a hand wherever I can, Mayor Lee, if you guys are willing to take some hand-me-downs that are in good shape, I've got a whole bunch of chairs sitting underneath the office. We'll see that you get them, as many as you need. I think we got a whole warehouse full of stuff out at TRI that probably could outfit you pretty good, too. Also, on the topic of the library, I agree with what D.A. Maddox says and also what Judge Harrington offered, that there should be some facility available on either end of the county for the people. I know I have space there in the new building in Lockwood where we could locate that if that would be the will of the commission. Or the alternative to that is we approach the GID, see if they're willing to move their office into that space that's available in my building. We get out from the $6,000 a year we're paying them, and we put the law library in the community center. There's options. So, I don't really know where to start on my budget. So I'm going to start with the things that aren't an issue. How's that? We'll go with where my papers go. How about the operational expenses? We're going to pass wages and benefits for a minute. Operational expenses, we've been holding them steady, as Commissioner Gilman has suggested. Every year we go through, we tweak those, base those on our usage and our best projections. You can see from the information in front of you, we've gone down from $250,000 3 years ago to our current projection at $195,000. So, and we constantly tweak those based on our needs and our projections. A couple of things have gone up because of those projections. Fuel costs are projected to be a little higher this year because of market. Lab fees are up because of our contract services with Washoe County. Their lab, their costs to me are going up. I just reviewed the contract with them, and it's increased about $5,000 this year. So that's what that covers. As far as general expenses, those are down significantly. Part of that is because of, in conversations with Comptroller, we put capital improvement projects on hold. Those are issues that I have some concerns with, as I'm sure you saw in the letter I sent to you all yesterday, a copy of which is here on the front bench for anybody in the audience who would like to see it, since it's not in the packet. The rest of our costs there are based on our usage, contract with Lyon County for animal control. Our special investigations takes care of all our investigative needs. But the only thing that doesn't really change, our enforcement supplies are down because of the rotational stock program that we've got in place. We're better able to manage our resources. And then down to the bottom category, the interest, insurance, miscellaneous category, those are based on interests that are calculated out as coming due in the year, and other payments that are at a fixed rate. The principal payment that's at the bottom of it. That's a final payment on a note that was carried over from 2009. So, and you'll see that in all of those categories, there have been significant decreases. And even in my initial proposal that included several capital improvement projects, there would have still been a decrease in that significantly from last year. Any specific questions about any of those categories? Then let's jump back up to personnel, staffing. That's always the biggest portion of the budget, and that's where the biggest concern is in. Just to make sure everybody knows the background on it, there were concerns. We had a remediation process several meetings ago because of over expenditures in my overtime budget. So when we started into the budget process this year, there was a plan or an idea in place that what do we need to do to fix that to control overtime. Now, in reality, you're never going to stop the overtime, not when it comes to this job. We can't just close down at the end of the day. We can't tell people we'll see you tomorrow at 8 to 5. There's end-of-shift arrests that happen. There's court that there's no way conceivable to anticipate when those things are going to happen. Unfortunately, we don't have a night court, so the night deputies can attend on duty time. Those types of things we can't control. What we can control to a degree is the overtime that's accrued by people needing to take annual leave, people calling in sick, event staffing on the weekends. But to do that, I have to have resources. And in the initial budget proposal that I put together, those resources were factored in. Now, understand times are tight. In conversations with the comptroller, that wasn't going to work, so that got whittled back to the point where I'm left believing I can't even fill my vacancies right now, and going into the new budget year, I don't even have the resources to cover 24/7. As you probably gathered from my justification letter, I wasn't real pleased about that. Especially having to close down my programs, having to close down my outreach program, having to close down my school program, having to close down my investigations unit. That was all just to provide basic coverage. Still couldn't provide 24/7 coverage in all areas of the county 7 days a week. Now, in some conversations with Hugh since then, we may have come to a happy medium somewhere that allows me to have that basic coverage, allows me to keep my programs in place, and allows me to have some kind of impact on overtime, some controlling factor of it. My two biggest concerns are to provide, first and foremost, is to provide for the safety of the community. And we do that in a number of ways, not just having cops out there, not just writing tickets and arresting bad guys. As I detailed in the letter that I put out to you last night, the programs that we do with the senior outreach, the neighborhood watch, the school resource, all of those serve a preventative purpose. And unless there are specific questions, I won't go into additional detail about those over what I have. There's plenty of more examples. As I indicated in the letter, the school district is obviously interested in retaining that school officer by their willingness, if necessary, to step up and help retain that position on a percentage factor. Both the resource deputy and the outreach deputy overlap. They help fill in patrol coverage when there's people on leave, when people call in sick. Several of my guys are here because that addresses my second concern, and that's having the resources to keep my people safe when they're out there trying to keep the community safe. to ask them to go out by themselves without any recourse or any backup is insane. Contrary to what some people believe, there are people in the world who don't like cops. Not our community. Our community loves us. But it's those other people who come in.
Yes.
And I don't know, Commissioner Gilman, you can probably answer this better than me, but just a rough, wild swag. We got about 6,000 cars a day or 6,000 people a day moving in and out of those buildings on the industrial park. You know, Chairman, maybe you have the answer with your connection with the tourism folks. Maybe Denny has an answer. But by my best swag, I'm estimating 1 million plus people coming through Virginia City a year for the different events and through tourism and everything. That's a lot of folks for just a couple of guys to be out there handling. So my proposal is to fill those three, the two vacancies that I currently have, and the additional body that was identified a year ago when the county manager and I decided we would hold that in advance, hopefully in pursuit of a contract that we were after with the federal government, which is, they still say they're interested in, but the federal government's more of a soup sandwich than anybody, so getting an answer out of them is, you know, who knows. But with some scheduling realignments, with getting those three bodies, I can provide the coverage that the citizens of this county deserve. I can do those preventative things to prevent the crime from occurring in the first place and keep our community safe. And a little bit more expensive than what the revisions were when Hugh and I sat down, a little bit less than what I had initially proposed, but I'm hoping that it's going to be a happy medium that will serve everybody's purpose.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Carol, but Jeff, on your eight-hour schedule that you had, is the three new people in the jail, or are you adding on to your 12 patrol people currently scheduled in this in your schedule here?
Well, I don't have 12 patrol people right now. The three new people would be hired into the jail at a lower rate of pay, as we discussed. I figured I'd leave that for when we got to the jail fund.
Okay.
But three of the Category 1 certified officers that are currently assigned to the jail would be brought out to fill the vacancies that are out on the street. And just for the edification of the commission, what we're talking about is creating a new classification in the jail, which would come in at a lower rate of pay than what my current deputies are. These people would not even be considered deputies. They would be titled correctional officers, totally separate classification. And if those folks from working in the detention center wanted to come out into patrol, it would be basically the same process as one of my guys wanting to go to work for Gary up at the fire department. They would have to go through the entire application process, new probationary period, everything. I mean, we would separate those two divisions completely.
I like the idea of using non-sworn in the jail, and I'm wondering...
Well, they, if I can clarify, they would still be sworn because by law they have to be. If they never left the facility, I could use a civilian guard for it. But by virtue of, we have to bring them up here for court, we have to take them down to Carson for medical, dental care, things like that. So when they transport outside those facilities, they have to be armed, and to do that, they have to be certified. But they will be certified as a Category 3 peace officer, which is the standards for correctional officers in
basically
the state of Nevada.
Kenny Furlong got in Carson.
Actually, if you want to make a more accurate comparison, it would be exactly like the Department of Corrections has at the state prison.
Okay. That's, yeah, that seems like a... Now, transitioning into that, would you do that over a period of time? How would we...
Well, the training process takes a while, so I would hopefully transition into that as soon as possible, which, and if we approve this in the budget process, then come July, I can start the recruitment, I can get people in, and if we know that the budget's going to be approved and we're going that way, we can even recruit before July with the intentions of bringing them on board in July, but we still have to go through a training process, probably, and if we did all of the advance applications, testing, interviewing, medicals, all of that before July 1st, and had them ready to actually start July 1, then we'd be looking at probably end of August, middle of September, by the time they were ready to function solo, and I could pull those people out as the new folks became trained.
Yeah, through attrition or whatever, and, you know.
Well, the need right now is there in the patrol division. I've got my resource folks covering shifts. I'm still generating a lot of overtime getting shifts covered. I've got the two vacancies right now. I've got one individual out on a long-term injury. It probably won't be seen until the end of summer. So we are generating overtime right now. That, and as soon as I can get relief for, I will. But as we train the new folks in the jail, I can pull those Category 1 deputies out of there to fill in the slots in the patrol division, and that would leave one Category 1 still in the jail just because of budgeting and slots, but at the first point of attrition on the patrol side, he would also be removed from the jail, and then it would be totally the Category 3 facility, with the exception of the jail supervisor, which we've been talking about that too, and the potential of turning him into an administrative position, salaried, but we can also flex him around to help cover the shifts. Right now he's helping cover with transports up to court, because like it or not, I've got to have somebody in the jail 24/7, whether there's one person in there or whether there's 25 people in there.
Some thoughts?
Go ahead, some thoughts.
I want to thought it. First of all, sensitive to your comments that overtime is very difficult. I run a lot of businesses 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And overtime is something that is very challenging. And the staffing is very challenging. And with sickness and in-calls and all the things that come in, it's very challenging. That being said, I think we all, and we have been, adding now overtime to our general line budget. Just to kind of give an idea, in 2010, we ran $320,000 worth of overtime in our community. In 2011, we ran $384,000. In 12, we did $581,000. And I can tell you, just in January of this year, we ran 2,250 hours of overtime at over $72,000. Now, if you take that times 12, we're going to run in 13 a lot more overtime than we had in a year in the past three. So
you're absolutely correct, Commissioner Gilman. And like I said, I've got two vacancies, and in January of this year, I had two people out on medical leave.
So that being said, I think we can all agree that overtime is an issue, that it takes a lot of oversight, and nobody knows that better than I do. And I think as a community, in all departments, not just yours, that overtime needs to be something that's focused on, line item. I think we ought to bring it in here to the commission on a regular monthly basis. I think we ought to look at it. There are ways to control overtime, but you have to know what your problems are. And so if you bring those to the commission and we look at them on the ongoing during the year, we can be sensitive to your problems and see if we can all collectively figure out how to reduce those. I have, talking about where we stand on your budget today, and first of all, I've made it painfully clear. I really believe in zero-based budgeting for any business, whether it be public or private, because that's the way you control your costs, you identify where you are, and I really like a narrative that comes in and helps with the line items understand where the budget is, where it's going, what the plans are, and how much is being allocated to what things. One of the things that's interesting to me as I go through the budget now is I really don't have a budget from the Sheriff's Office, a tentative. I have the one that you, I believe, originally submitted. Perhaps that was with our comptroller. And then I have an amended one. And then I have a letter, sort of a negotiating position on let's meet somewhere in the middle. So as I sit here today as a commissioner, I really don't know what your line item zero baseline budget looks like. I haven't seen that. And I haven't seen a narrative that really oversights it. And some of the things that, at least from my layman's chair that I look at, it looks to me like you actually have three budgets. If, and you and I have talked, and I couldn't agree more, that being a sheriff and protecting the public safety with a basic law enforcement coverage, that's a baseline. That's where we all start. That's where your officers are on the beat. That's when you're in the communities. You've got a baseline law enforcement budget and total coverage for the community so that, as Dale Beach says, he feels safe in his house. So to me, that's where the baseline is. And then as I look through, you have developed within your department within the last couple of years a significant community outreach program set. And you're active and to a very positive direction. But you have expanded your budget for your department's oversight and responsibilities. And I don't know that we even know all the things that you are doing. But they all impact the budget. So my thought would be to start out on a nice clean sheet, develop a basic law enforcement coverage budget, add in the community outreach that's been expanded with the services, so we can see what law enforcement takes, what community outreach takes, and then we have a jail fund. And with the three of those clearly on a sheet of paper, we know what our law enforcement department, community outreach department, is actually suggesting for a budget for the next fiscal year. So that would be my recommendation. Otherwise, as I sit here, I don't have a budget to work with except a grand total at the bottom, and that's meaningless. Unless we look at the budget items and consider every dollar spent, we're really not doing our jobs in overseeing the fiscal budget.
Well, Commissioner Gilman, I don't know what you have there, and I appreciate your insight on how to run a law enforcement agency, but if you look through the papers I've submitted, and if you don't have them, I'll be glad to give them to you, but there is a line item budget that says what is coming out of each account. There are only two budgets, the general fund and the jail fund. As far as my community resources, you can take the wages of the two deputies that are used for that, and that's what it costs us. Everything we have done, outreach, has either been paid out of my own pocket, Deputy Mendoza's pocket, through donations from the different deputies, or through community donations. The only cost for Story County for these outreach programs are the wages for the two deputies involved.
And I'd like to consider that.
And everything is right there, or has been right there in the packet. Now, as far as the final budget, where it's going to be, that's what the comptroller and I have been discussing, because the first one was too high of a cost, the second one is too low of coverage. So we're working on trying to get to a middle ground. So all I can tell you is those things that we have tentatively agreed on, which are operational expenses, which there's a line item right there that says lab fees, $20,000 increase due to contract increases with the provider. It's Washoe County Lab and the toxicology fees. Computer software, that's the annual cost for our Sun Ridge system, which is our records management system. So the line item is there, and it says specifically what it is. And then there was a generalized overview that went with it. So if you don't have these papers, I'll be happy to get them to you.
I have these papers, but you were talking about a middle ground. And if there is a middle ground, I assume that the budget changes line item.
No, the middle ground is not in operational expenses. It's not in general expenses. The middle ground for me is having the staffing that I need to provide those services, which only affects the personnel costs, wages and salaries. The rest of the numbers, I'm concerned about us not completing the capital improvements that need to be done, but if there's fiscal hardship on the county, then I can understand having to postpone those. So those numbers I can even live with. My only concern right now is staffing, which equates solely to to wages and benefits, which, yes, it will change the bottom line, but the numbers that are projected in the letter that I gave are based on the numbers that the comptroller and I came up with. So I mean, if we go with this middle ground proposal, those figures are what will be there. And if you look, there's four different numbers. The only one that changes is wages and benefits. Operational expenses, general expenses, miscellaneous expenses, those are identical to what has been submitted.
But what hasn't been pulled out of the wages and benefits, if what portion of that is being allocated to community service and outreach programs, which is not pure law enforcement.
I just told you the only thing allocated for that is wages, and there is a wage breakdown by deputy of what each deputy makes. The only thing that the community outreach costs us is the wages for those two deputies.
So you could break that out for us so we can see that?
It is broken out.
Mr. Gillen, Sheriff and I have been on quite a few occasions, and we'll probably have a couple more before all of this is satisfied. We can take part of this, make some suggestions as to whether or not we want to take the outreach program, make that into a option code, as far as we're concerned, if you want to document that way. But at the very least, give you some sort of a document that says this is where we are in the process. Obviously, the sheriff has come back with a schedule that I looked at on Friday that I thought was had merit, understanding the fact that if those in those processes where annual leave was concerned, if we could cover that annual leave, then we would be very, very close. So we're going to go back to the board how many ever times as we can, and we're going to get something that's viable for the sheriff because he has to have coverage. We'll have to have spend something viable for what I believe should makes a very good budget presentation.
I've been attempting to get to that baseline here at the table right now. I appreciate you saying that, and I would appreciate you looking at that. And if you could go ahead and pull out for us the community outreach. And by the way, I think they're wonderful programs. So I in no way want to diminish what's going on. But I think we ought to differentiate between pure basic law enforcement and the safety of the houses and the community outreach program, which you have championed and very good at.
No, and I would beg to differ with you as far as whether they are pure law enforcement or not. I would suggest they are pure law enforcement. They're more focused on the preventative side rather than the detection and apprehension side. Prevention is just as much a part of law enforcement as going out there and writing a ticket or throwing somebody in jail.
Well, I think our debate is probably definition. So
well, and that may be.
The word definition, then we'll have this.
And again, if I can weigh in just for a moment, Commissioner Gillen, I think your focus, based on information you do not have, on specific salaries and benefits for the two individual deputies currently performing those, would be worthy of breaking those out into the individual programs as has been suggested. And one thing that has been offered verbally, not through any official channels yet or anything, is I know the school resource program is so vital to the district that the school superintendent has expressed an interest in partially funding or offsetting some of our costs with that program. And I think that makes it all the more important that we itemize out for you, like Hugh said, either through object coding or separate line items and salary and benefits, those functions that are partnered with the outreach. So we can get that, because he does not have the individual breakdowns.
I did not know that. I have.
He's a department head.
Well, doesn't look like we're going to be able to resolve this today. So at least we've got some feedback from all parties. Did any of you fellows want to say anything? Since you're all here, come on up. I kind of anticipated that they might. So I'd like to hear from you.
And I'll say the caveat for all of them who choose to speak, they speak as an individual, not as a representation of the office of sheriff.
Hop up there behind that mic and blast away at us.
Hello, commissioners and public. My name's Eric Kern. I'm a Story County resident. I live in the Highlands. Have for the last 3 years. I'm also a deputy sheriff at Story County Sheriff's Office, and I feel it's the best place in the world to work. I get to interact with all you people and make this community work to make this community better and crime-free. Just like the sheriff said, I'm seeing this as a citizen with some insight because I am a deputy. When I'm working, the only other person is all the way on the other side of Sparks. And that's for 6 to 12 hours a day, depending what shift you work. I'm lucky enough on my shift that we have a cover, a deputy that works through the mid-shift who works 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and he comes in at noon and then works till midnight. The other shift, it's just two guys. And my concern is, for me, I have a wife and a child. I love this community, and I try to look out as best I can. You could ask the communications director. I've probably called in quite a few things, as we all have, when I'm not working. But I want to go home, and I want to see my family. I want to be able to do my job safely. And it makes it tough not having even just one extra person to flip-flop back and forth to cover for us. If I'm in the course of doing my job, and I have somebody that's in my custody, I'm responsible for them by liability, you know. And if there's a call that's in the Highlands, I can't just let that person go. I have to rely on someone else to help me. And whether that be Washoe County or Lyon County or calling somebody out, there's just not enough time, you know. Potentially someone's life could be in danger. And I think that I just want to ask, as a commission, that you would review that and think about that. You know, we could use a little more help. I mean, I could go somewhere else, but I don't want to. I've made my set my stance here in my house. I want to live here. I want to work here until I retire. But I have to keep the safety of myself and my family in mind, as well as all the other people that I work with, as well as the residents. And I did also want to hint on the community programs. I, just like a lot of you, do feel they're very important. These programs have bettered a lot of the residents' way of life, I could say. I mean, they've got people involved that weren't involved. They have somebody to turn to and talk to. They're a little more informed. They're a little more prepared, you know, because of our interaction with them. And our regular patrol deputies work with programs. Working with assisting, that's our job. We're here to serve and protect this community. So I'd like to see that you would let those programs stay in place. They have done a lot for the residents, and I think they do appreciate them. And that's all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Frank Alves. I've been a deputy with Story County for 7 years. I'm not just an employee of the Story County Sheriff's Office. I'm an employee of Story County, and I'm very proud of that. And I understand the need for belt tightening, but as line guys, we feel the pinch, you know, up close and personal, with equipment, with training, especially with lack of bodies. I spent many years working graveyards on my own. I have been in situations where there have been, life-threatening situations. You may recall a stabbing that took place at the Ponderosa. I was working alone that evening. We had to call in, frankly, calling in backup from some agencies is like pulling teeth. We had people come all the way from Douglas. We had people come in from Carson. We had people come in from Lyon. But there was an exigent circumstance. I was dealing with a crowd of approximately 150 people. I had to assess whether that crowd was hostile. I had to clear the crowd and make sure the paramedics were able to get in and do their jobs. I had to do this alone. At any time the crowd could turn hostile, all we could do is turn tail and run. To have an extra body is invaluable. I ask that you consider that the support of the commissioners in the eyes of the deputies would be incredible for our morale in general. It would be nice to know that we have that support. In regards to the community programs, we are all a part of those programs. We all have each other's back. John Michael has helped me immeasurably in many cases that I've had and expedited things that I've had to deal with and freed me up to do other tasks that I need to deal with. I thank you for your time and the opportunity to speak. Please consider all the options. Thank you.
Thank you so much. John Michael, Tad, anyway, have you got anything to want to add anything?
Well, actually,
not. Almost got, there's another one.
Well, good evening.
Long-term injury.
John Michael Mendoza, I am not a resident of Story County, but I've been serving Story County for a number of years. When I first came to Story County, I came as a reserve and volunteered my services for 7 years. Without expectation of pay. My service continues on, and I am proud to be heading the community outreach program, which is really important to me. And if any one of you has a relative or family that are over 60 years old, you'll know what I do. Unfortunately, some of the stuff I cannot talk in detail because that's part of the program. It's part of the respect that I owe to them. And it's part of the HIPAA rules that we have to keep confidentially. But as a result of my efforts in I've been able to make a difference in this community, and I want to continue to do so. You can ask, almost over 50% of our residents are over the age of 60. And just ask around, see if the program works. And I believe truly it's worth it. I urge you to consider what has been said before me and take the appropriate action. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, John Michael. Come on up. Get all of this out of here.
Oh, no, let's get it out. Hi, my name is Terry Croxton, and I live in Lockwood. When I first moved to Story County, there was little or no law enforcement presence in Lockwood at all. I saw maybe a patrol car once a month, seriously. We had security, which was more of a patrol of our neighborhood, provided by our homeowners association. After Sheriff Antonora was elected, the presence of deputies was very evident. We now have a substation, and that substation is now like a mobile home because of budget cuts. But that saved the county money. And so we're all over that. We've all gone down, and Mary Lee's husband and many people in the community have worked there doing whatever needed to be done to get that up and running for you. The deputies' attitudes in the community changed. We have a great relationship now. The sheriff's office has been supportive of our efforts to start a neighborhood watch, and it's done, and it's been up and running for 3 years. Our neighborhood is now more aware, and we watch out for each other because the deputies care about our seniors and watch out for their welfare. That got us together as a community, and we have made great strides in raising the bar on our own properties, how we feel about our community, planting trees in our park to help out, and who was there on the weekend, on their off time, in their cities, helping out, but the sheriff, John Michael, and other deputies. We have an Easter egg hunt for our kids, we have a Mother's Day breakfast for our moms, and we have a spaghetti feed for all of River District. That's due to the sheriff. Yes, we now call it the River District because we are all in this county together. It used to be Lockwood and the trailer park and whoever else down by the river. The sheriff's office has brought us together and helped us start a We Care, which is a outreach program. We've made our own money. We've gone and gotten our own money, and we have started a free program, Senior Awareness Week, National Night Out Activities, and the Holiday Assistance Program. And, by the way, we have a huge population of seniors in this county, and we contribute. We pay taxes, and we vote. We watch what our leaders do, and we can read the paper, and we do. The Sheriff's Office is this county's best asset. Look at your ledger sheet, and see who is creating an atmosphere of neighborhoods, caring, and cohesiveness. It is keeping us all vigilant and therefore less susceptible to crime in our individual areas, as well as giving the entire county a feeling of safety. I come to Virginia City and I never, ever think, like I do when I go downtown to Reno, oh, it's getting dark, I better get off the streets. I never feel that way here. As you balance your budget, I hope you will reward your good child and not increase money for the bad children. We now call ourselves Jerry's Kids, and we want the Sheriff's Department to thrive and keep taking care of us. Please make it so.
This is one of us. Marilyn Miller from the River District. I'm here today representing the residents of the River District. As you know, we are next to Interstate 80. That doesn't happen to you, that doesn't happen to Mark Twain, but it certainly happens to us. We need a 24/7 presence down there just because of that, because we have had some really strange people come off that interstate not knowing what they were getting into until they'd pull up and see Story County Sheriff. Whoop, they go right back. So you can imagine that we need this type of control down there to keep ourselves safe. We don't have security anymore with the Homeowners Association. It's now called Patrol. And excuse me if I offend anybody, but I think their sole job is to make sure the pavement is still on the road, because that's all they do. They can no longer check our homes when we're gone on vacation. They cannot come on our property. There's not a whole lot that they can do down there except drive around. If they see something, they call the sheriff. They don't take care of it. So it's really important for all of us to have this type of coverage. It just doesn't happen without our deputies there taking care of us. Wellness checks. They do a lot of wellness checks in our area. We do have a lot of handicapped. We have some people that are totally handicapped that need to be checked on because maybe that's the day that their family has gone to town, or their family did take a vacation and someone and the county nurse only comes 3 times a week or whatever. So they do a lot of wellness checks, and their constant presence on duty has made our community a lot safer. I do a lot of walking. I do a lot of community things, and I have never gone out of my house and gone any place there, any time of the day, evening, morning, without feeling totally comfortable to be able to go wherever I wanted to walking. It's very important. We saved some money, the sheriff did, by moving his substation out of the high-priced rent. So I would encourage you not to let any strange ideas that you've had in the past as to what's going on, because you were just wondering, not to cloud your judgment in what is best for the residents of Story County. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Jan House. Before I put out questions, can I know what is your existing employee now? Number of employees now?
19.
19. The futures, the coming, what is your number of employees for next year?
21.
Okay. Thank you.
Is asking how many employees you have? Oh.
Now, when I was earlier, I mentioned about fire and sheriff is very important for our community. So, my question is that, which is more important? Sheriff rules protect us 24/7. Fire is only season. Majority is on during the summertime. When I look at the cost basis, Fire is $4 million budgeted totally, has 31 employees. Now, the sheriff is only $2 million plus, and has, as I said, as he has concluded, is only 19. Now, is there something wrong on that basis? I look at something's wrong.
I think there's something wrong with your mouth.
What do you mean, my mouth? My mouth is to speak. My earth is, my God gave, created my mouth to speak.
Mouth. Not your mind.
Okay. My mouth, what means mouth is wrong. When you look at it, 4 million with 31 employees.
Well,
okay.
An argument from the fire chief on your facts here, so.
What do you mean my facts is wrong? My fact is correct because it's indicated as what he is budgeted. 4 million as the fire functions on that basis, and they have other programs.
Okay.
Janet, make one observation for you. 80% of the fire department's calls are health, EMTs, ambulance. Only 20% fire. And that's all year round.
Yep.
So it means to say 80% is for that.
80% 80% of the fire department calls, is what I'm telling you,
medical.
Are medical, ambulance, EMT, not fire. Only 20% of the fire department's firefighting, only 20% is the fire.
So are you saying to me is that majority of that salary is the medical's officers, employments, rather than the firemen?
Yes.
All right, because when I look at the, when I look totally look at the, each individual employee, the emergency on that, I could see that the difference of the salary itself too. When you total up together, it's totally different too. When you add it up, it's just totally different. I can send it to you, the analysis on what I have done on that basis.
I understand that the fire department is in the medical business as well as firefighting. They aren't there just in the summertime and seasonal. They are 12 months out of the year medical. Very important.
All right, I understand that. You are saying that I understand that theoretically. But when I look at further deeper, when you break it up, that is a different story. That is totally different on that basis. Because when I look at the, each component itself, when you break it up totally, more detail, that is difference. Well, I appreciate, I would.
The next presenter is the fire chief, as soon as we're done with the sheriff. And then maybe this will answer some of your questions, okay? So why don't you relax and let's get going.
I'm relaxed. I just want to get some clarification because every time when I send to y'all some questions, come to the meeting, attend the meetings, and have the answer. But I have, so far, I have not get any much answer.
Well,
thank you.
Okay.
You ready for the jail fund, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, we do. Go ahead, Jerry.
All right, jail fund's a lot less controversial.
You got a lot of support in the room.
And I appreciate the support and the comments from everybody.
Thank all
I truly do.
Coming in today.
In the right packet here.
This is Jesus. We're going to work on things, if it's all right. We're going to make sure we roll this into the sheriff's office. What are we going to do with it? Jail fund is totally confusing to me.
Well, you know, as far as the numbers go, you know, the numbers, as far as the numbers are there, I'm sorry, Commissioner Gilman, if you don't have a breakdown on personnel costs there, but, and we kind of touched on it a little bit as far as creating the new positions that will reduce wages and benefits in there, excuse me, our operational costs, as they're stated. There's been a couple of increases based on contractual costs with copy machines. Because of the new position, we had to add some money to cover uniforms because they're not covered by a current collective bargaining agreement. So there's no set standard, so we're using the same principle we would use when we bring on a reserve or something as far as the initial outfitting. Utilities, equipment agreements, training, those types of things, those are all necessities, you know, that have to be done, and they're pretty well fixed from day to day. Our inmate medical, food, supplies, those are based on our best projections, based on our historical daily populations. And as far as the expenses themselves in the jail, could I use more staff in the jail? Yes, I could, but I'm not asking for any right now. So the biggest problem with the jail is the jail fund. And there's been conversations about that. I know Hugh has looked around. I've looked around. I was on the phone even 24 hours ago now, this time yesterday with Department of Taxation. And I think Hugh has probably spent as much or more time than anybody trying to find this. And there is just nothing we can find. And the concerns that have been voiced and expressed is, what is the purpose of the jail fund? And if the purpose of the jail fund is to run the jail and all things jail, including salaries, wages, everything, then it's definitely, and I think you will verify this, it's definitely not got the proper funding mechanism because it doesn't cover the cost.
Yeah, that's the exact answer I got from Sheriff Del Carlo, who, when this fund was put into place, is under his tenure. They built the jail, and he said that the jail fund was specifically created to run the jail itself. Now, whether there's any misinformation to that between, it was a long time ago, or it's just ironic that taxation, nobody has any record of this from day one. Of course, we're missing the master plan maps of the Story County also.
Well, and I'll tell you what I've been able to piece together. Hugh can fill in any gaps or if he's heard something to the contrary, but from historical perspective, what I've been told is that the jail fund was initially enacted to pay for the construction of the new jail, but that had a sunset to it.
The
new jail is in the old jail, as in our current jail, not the jail downstairs.
Okay.
But that had a sunset on it that, at least what I'm being told, maybe was the late 90s, early 2000s. Pat, I don't know if you recall anything about this, but
early 2000s, like 2003.
Sometime around that sunset, it was extended or allowed to continue on, and there was some minor tweaking because of concerns at that point in time as to how the jail fund was initially set up. And then just from conversations with both Pat and with Jim Miller, those who preceded me, I mean, that's always been the intent and desire, is to fund the jail operation out of the jail fund. But the mechanism that puts those monies in there isn't sufficient to cover the cost, which is one of the reasons we've been trying to pursue contracts to sell out our vacant beds to help cover those costs. Yeah.
Well, one comment and one question then. It sounds like we can pretty much do carte blanche, whatever we want, with the jail fund. And how is the community best served? Do we keep it and set it up as a specific jail fund? Or do we do away with it and just roll it into your budget? I don't know the answer to that.
There's you guys are the ones concerned with the money. So,
right, the bottom line.
You're the bottom line guy, so you're going to have to decide where it goes and where it comes from and where it goes. I can tell you that Department of Taxation yesterday told me that if we cannot find any record of it, and I'll tell you right now, my latest adventure has been trying to research old newspapers to see if I can find anything, because that's every source of official record does not have it.
I guess you went to the office and looked at the old commission report.
No.
went through a couple months ago, and went through the county commission minutes, starting from the 70s forward, resolutions, ordinances, okay, election ballots,
and that yours, not actually yours.
Sheriff, well, how do other jurisdictions handle this? Do you know?
You know, some have jail funds, some don't. So it's, as I say, it's six of one, half a dozen of another. The Department of Taxation says if we can find absolutely nothing on it, then one fix would be for you folks to issue a new resolution that says specifically what it entails, what it's for, how it's allocated. To do that, we're going to have to go back and look at the numbers, because I can tell you with the levy that is attached to the jail fund is insufficient to cover the cost from one year to the next. I believe Pat can confirm this, that in its entire existence, there has been one year it's been able to cover costs.
Okay, it's 0.0745 is the rate for the jail fund.
You know, I'm not sure what the specific point is, but it's, I can tell you that because of ending
tax,
fund balances.
That's the tax rate on
that. That's the tax rate. Plus they get, if I may change here, plus they get some jail court fees and things of this nature. The thing that concerns me is that at present, even with the budget, they're in a negative ending fund balance. We've got to correct that. We're 2 days into the last quarter. I will get with the sheriff, and we'll find a resolution to this.
And that's one of the problems with maintaining the jail fund, is the state has additional requirements, and where we're dealing with such a small fund, those ending fund balances can really hurt. Whereas if it is rolled over into the general, then there's much more wiggle room.
Do you see a negative in doing that? If we were to, in this budget cycle, roll the jail fund into, is there a negative?
Yes, there is a negative, but it's a hypothetical negative. It's nothing that I cannot say right now it's a negative. If the Department of the Interior ever comes about and signs that contract with us, if State of Nevada, if whoever ever steps forward and starts contracting beds with us, with Bureau of Indian Affairs, that contract would generate about $400,000 a year, which between that and what is already appropriated would adequately fund the jail. So then we wouldn't be impacting it. The other negative to rolling it into the general is that now it's that much more of a drain on the entire general, but you get that little bit of money back that helps offset it. But as we see, the jail fund does not cover jail operations, so it would be more of a hit. But the very reverse is true, too. If you up the amount of allocation to the jail fund, you're still decreasing the general.
If the contract came through from whomever, it wouldn't take us long to throw a jail fund together if we had to. I mean, would we be in trouble with doing that if we...
No, the only issues would be dealing with the reforms of the Nevada Department of Taxation as to timing's everything. You know, if we knew we were going to get the revenue, we could potentially budget for the revenue. We don't know if this has been an ongoing process.
If we eliminated it right now, which is what I'm thinking, is that what you want to do, is just get rid of it?
Well, short of having any thing on the horizon, we've been in negotiations with the Bureau of Indian Affairs for 2 years. We had a draft contract a year ago, and it's back there, and what we keep hearing from them is they're waiting for Washington to make a decision.
You know, if it doesn't impact us, you know, we do whatever is a financial advantage, immediate financial advantage, on where the other, then that's the way we're going to go.
Well, and that would be my thought. I don't know if you has any specific knowledge about how you dissolve one of those, or if Pat does, or as far as fiscal concerns, but I would not be opposed to just dissolving and rolling it back into the general, and should a bountiful harvest come in the future, we can relook at establishing a jail fund.
By the time you got a contract, we're probably looking at 6 months to make the whole thing gel together.
We're ready for it any time. If they were to deliver a signed contract tomorrow, we could have their inmates in it the next day.
Yeah, but most likely there's going to be some discussion and would you like to do it, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, we could throw a jail fund back together if we had to. You see where I'm going with that, Jerry?
Yeah, well, and like I said, it makes no matter to me one way or another whether it rolls back into the general or if we maintain it, but if we are going to maintain it, we have to fix the funding.
I'd say, if dump it then, I mean, it just seems, what do you think, Hugh? I mean,
there's two considerations. One is that the jail function is separate and distinct from the sheriff's primary responsibilities in the 107 account. Understanding the fact that we are embarking on a potential changing of personnel to Category 3 personnel, okay, this makes the jail fund a little more viable, but it makes it whatever's coming in from this revenue source, whatever's going out in salary and benefits and equipment maintenance and whatever, all of this stuff. But as like you mentioned with Mike's fund with Rose, we got to fund it. Okay, we got to find a funding source that's synonymous with what they do. Okay. Now, going back to all this research, it seems like the general allocated that 11 cents out of the bottom rate, gave it to them for the payment of the loan that was on the jail fund. Pretty much.
Well, yeah. The sheriff says that the loan was budgeted, and I think it might have been the contractor who built it that actually held the note.
Right. And I'm thinking that's exactly what he told me.
He said it was budgeted, but everybody else seems to think maybe it wasn't. So.
Well, from what I've found out from a couple of the ladies who used to work for the county is that it was initially financed by Wells Fargo, I believe, and then it switched to someone else, or else it was financed by someone else and then switched. It did switch banks during the finance.
Wells Fargo back then, when that jail was built, Wells Fargo didn't have a place in Nevada.
Well, it started out, somebody in Idaho, I believe, is who they were dealing with, is what Mary Lou told me.
Yeah.
What I heard, I called when we discussed the possibility that there was a bond issue. There's a firm, you know, Swinside and Stern, who does most of the bond issues. And I called them and asked them if they could check back to see if they'd ever, because they would have been the one that had done the bond. They've never done it.
Oh, there's a bond.
And they do bonds all the time. And they do a lot, they've done a lot for Story County over the years. So I asked them, have you ever done a jail bond? They said no. But Jennifer Stern said, back in the 80s or 70s, whenever, there was a company going around that would construct and finance jails. And so, as a possible explanation, along with every other one, it could be that happened. They set up a fund to pay that loan back and designated it as the jail fund. And then once it was paid off, then the fund just continued for the operation of the jail. So that could be another of the several explanations that we have for how that fund came about.
Was that 11 cents been enough to pay it back?
Must have been.
It was, as I recall, Commissioner McBride, because some of those payments were made under my term as sheriff, and it actually was enough as property values, ad valorem revenues increased due to tribe primarily. It even gave us some ability to offset some of our costs in there. As the sheriff has accurately stated, in any given year, we could go anywhere from funding potentially one jailer, at the time it was a dispatch jailer, as I recall, to maybe paying for the electric on the building or something, but it has over the years definitely sustained itself for its original intent based on what Bill just said.
This all makes sense now. That sounds pretty much what the former sheriff Doug Crowell said.
Well, it looks to me like at this point, Hugh and Jerry can
start. We can come to a, there's a, we'll look at, I would try and find the funding source, understanding that in that there won't be there'll be Category 3 people in that with a supervisor that is, we haven't discussed a whole lot about whether he's going to be administrator or not. And then take a look at that, see what funding functions we can put in there that's doable. Then come back and say, this is what we found. If the sheriff and I agree with it, we'll send it out and see what everybody thinks, and we'll kind of go from there.
And we are exploring other options besides the Bureau of Indian Affairs, since they can't make a decision. And most recently, I even told my jail supervisor, if he asked to start renting part of it out as a bed and breakfast vacation experience. So if we can generate funding, we will.
You can bring those guys in.
Right now, another possible source, and Tony goes and can talk to me about this, is we could, when I was a private attorney down in Carson City, and I think Pat was the sheriff at the time, I used to, because the old jail in Carson, really, it wasn't the jail I spent time in, but the jail they built after that, they sent the store down and put another one up. But that jail got overloaded, and I understand Park Boulevard overloaded. So there's some people that get the 2-day sentence. They literally have to go to the jail 5 or 6 times, and they just have to keep those weekends available. And that maybe we could have, you know, put out to the defense attorneys around northern Nevada that they can come up and spend, get it done with up here. I've got a call into one of the JPs down in Reno to see if they would go along with that, because the JPs have to agree that that's something appropriate for them to do. But if we got that going on a pretty regular basis, that could be, you know, maybe 3-4 people a weekend, which would be $600-700.
Well, and we have housed people from other jurisdictions. A year or so ago, we had a gentleman who had to do some time out of an Alaskan court. He did his time with us last summer, I believe. We had a gentleman that did about $2,000 worth of time with us, because that's what it cost him, to stay in our jail out of Arizona, because they didn't want to go back to those jurisdictions to do their jail time. So, and we are doing some here and there, but we'd like to sell out 10, 12 beds on a regular basis.
All righty. Well, we're not going to solve any more here this evening on this one, so you ready to call it good for the moment?
I'm good if you gentlemen are good.
Okay. We'll move along then, and next time we'll adjourn. And,
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. Before we do that, I'd like to go ahead and hear the fire district budget as it would look as part of Story County general government. Okay, you've approved the 473 budget,
right?
But really, without much explanation, this would be the point in time that, assuming legislation passes and is signed by the governor, that would enact the Wildland Fire Protection Program from NDF. Then Chief Haynes, under the interlocal agreement that has been 2/3 approved so far, would execute the Wildland Fire Protection Program, not as part of his 474 district, but as part of Story County General Government. So that would be my suggestion, as we hear that while we're still meeting as a Board of Commissioners.
I would like a little break.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Okay.
I think once we start fire.
Let's do a break. Because we haven't taken one here for about almost 2 hours.